particularly be here in Houston.
Tonight we're on page number 11 in the lesson book. We're still in Acts chapter 9. And tonight we'll be looking at about verse 32 to the end of the chapter. We're ready for question number 13. Now we're going to talk about Peter tonight. Last week we talked about Paul and the situation there. And this week we'll be talking about Peter. As our custom has been, let's read the passage over before we begin. We have anybody that wants to volunteer to read verse 32 through the end of the chapter? All right.
And it came to pass, as Peter passed throughout all quarters, and came down also to the saints which dwelt at Lydda. And there he found a certain man named Aeneas, which had kept his bed 8 years, and was sick of the palsy. Peter said unto him, Aeneas, Jesus Christ make it thee whole. Arise, and make thy bed. And he arose immediately. And all that dwelt at Lydda and Sharon saw him, and turned to the Lord. Now there was at Joppa a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. This woman was full of good works, and alms deeds which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. Whom when they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. And forasmuch as Lydda was near to Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him weeping and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas made while she was with them. But Peter put them all forth, and kneeled down and prayed. And turning him to the body, said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand, and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints and widows, presented her alive. And it was known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. And it came to pass that he tarried many days in Joppa with one Simon, a tanner.
All right. Question number 13 is, where is Peter found at this time?
Passing through all quarters, but specifically Lydda and then Joppa later.
Yep. What did he do to Lydda? I'll spit it out in a minute. Healed a man named Aeneas. And King James says he had palsy. What does it mean to have palsy?
He was lame. He couldn't walk.
He was lame. He couldn't walk. That's for 8 years. That's what it means to have the palsy. And next part of the question is, what effect did it have on the people? They turn to the Lord. What I want you to notice as we go through these and we talk about these miracles and so forth, notice the result of each one of them. If you remember when we talked, had a lesson on miracles and we talked about it, what was one of the purposes of miracles?
Confirming the word.
And in this case, we see that it not only confirmed the word, but made believers. Because of what they were witnessing and what they were able to see.
I just want to say, 8 years, when I got ran over and I had to relearn how to walk, I wasn't down that long. It only took me a few months to heal, and I still had to relearn how to walk. So 8 years is just as glorious of a miracle as the man that had never walked that was laid at the beautiful gate. Because it doesn't matter, 4 years, 8 years, if you haven't walked in a year, let alone a month, you've got to relearn how to walk. It's just that simple. Your body has to retrain its muscles. Your mind has to learn to send those signals again. It's humiliating for a teenager, I know. But this is an extremely great miracle. Sometimes people just read through this and it's like, not nearly as glorious in their mind as the man of the beautiful day. But 8 years of not walking is just as impressive as healing someone that's never walked.
Yeah. And also think about this, somebody that's been crippled that long or not able to walk for that long, do you think that others knew about it?
You think that they turned to the Lord.
Yeah, the others knew about it. It was perhaps some had even helped, I don't know, had helped him, you know, to live occasionally. And then now he's up and about and walking. That is so.
You can tell from their legs. Somebody hasn't walked in 8 years, they have no muscle, no fat.
Yeah, you've atrophied.
I mean, this story is so similar to the other one earlier in that story, the man at the gate, because, I mean, everyone knew this man, kind of. And in a way, when he was healed, it just inspired everybody.
Yeah. They knew something great had happened. And the great. Something great was going on because of this miracle. That's why many turned to the Lord. Just as we see today that whenever people learn of the Lord and learn about what the great things he can do and what he has done, they're turned if they've got an open heart and an honest heart. Question number 14, who dwelt at Joppa? Yep, Tabitha or Dorcas. It's funny, somebody had a plant they named Dorcas at work because of this Bible story at one place I worked. Yep. They thought it was dead, they watered the thing and it came back to life, so they named it Dorcas.
Rachel's sister-in-law never likes it if I call her Dorcas. She always wants to be called Tabitha.
She's like, I'm not dead yet.
No, it's not even that so much.
Next part of the question is, name at least two things for which she was noted.
She was full of good works and charitable deeds.
Full of good works and charitable deeds, or alms deeds. To me, this is a good testament of the person, the character of the person, just to say that she was full of good works. And she was obviously somebody who was noted in the community, or I believe was noted in the community as well, because of the good works in which she had done. I know today, I think, when I think of people like this today, to me it's easier to stand out than it probably would have been in that day and time. I could be wrong about that, just speculation. But I think somebody that does good today sticks out, this kind of good will stick out like a sore thumb, because people generally are not concerned about those things anymore. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Because what have they trained us to think? How have they trained us to think?
Let the government
do it. I pay taxes, the government take care of it. And that's the absolute wrong way to go, as we've commented in other discussions. In our history, the people who take care of the poor and the ones that's downtrodden has generally been the churches and the people. But we've had a turn in our culture where that's not the case anymore. So somebody that you see doing good works, they're going to stand out. And then the second part is talking about this alms deeds. One of the definitions I looked at said that attended to the needs of the poor. I think this alms deeds carries on this idea of the poor. And so, as we'll see in a verse or two down, she focused on the widows, obviously taking care of the widows. And many times, or sometimes, the widows are the poorest of the people, because, you know, they've lost a source of income, they've lost a source of help through the death of a spouse. And if they don't have a family that will help take care of them, and they're not wealthy enough to buy that care, I guess you would say, they become very, very poor and desolate. And I believe that's why the church has been tasked with paying attention to this sort of thing. But nonetheless, we see that she was concerned about charitable deeds. So I could see her giving somebody that she felt needed food. I could see it happening. Somebody needed something to wear. That definitely happened, because we have it recorded for us. As somebody that I could even see her as being one of these types of people that somebody needed a place to stay on occasion. you know, because of something bad that happened to them, she'd be willing to let them stay. I could see her reading between the lines here that she was probably a very hospitable person as well. Because this need needed to be attended. Yeah. Yep. Question 15. What happened to Dorcas? Got sick and died. Verse 37.
I skipped right to the resurrection.
Why did the disciples send for Peter? Knew he was close. Thought he could do something about it. He was at Joppa, as we learned a little further down at the end of it, that he was there because that's where he was staying. He was staying with Simon the Tanner.
And they were familiar with
his miracles. Because they probably knew about Aeneas. If you think about it, they knew Aeneas just happened earlier. So they probably knew of this or had heard of it.
Well, all the Jews and, that were dwelling in these regions had come and heard the first gospel sermon. A lot of these people that are in these different quarters that Peter's visiting now, they all attended the Jewish feast because these are Jews. And so, you know, they may have very well been there and close enough to even hear the gospels. First gospel sermon preached by Peter in Acts chapter 2. We don't know for sure, but if they were being religious and devout, as they're supposed to be, they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, knowing that and then also knowing not only that they preached through Christ the resurrection from the dead, but the great signs and wonders that are accompanying these men, the tongues of fire that sat on these men, these are men with great authority and great power given by the Lord, and they're working through His name to do it for us.
Yeah, there's a significance there. Number 16, what particular group of people had Dorcas helped during her lifetime? Yep, the widows. Yeah, that's right. I didn't think about that. Pure religion, undefiled before God and the Father is this, to care for the widows and the fatherless and keep oneself unspotted from the world. What's that, James chapter 1, verse 27, I believe? So she was definitely playing that out, the pure religion. What evidence did they present for her good life? Yep, coats and garments. I like how that's a testament to her about the good works part, because there's evidence. It wasn't just somebody said, "Oh, she done something good for me." They brought the evidence through. It actually reminds me a little bit about one of the members here that died, and one of the things I thought about was all the things they had sewn and stitched together, and we looked at some of them. I had a piece. I had it almost looked like a photograph of a vase or a pot of daffodils. She'd won in the county fair one year, and we'd done some work. She'd give it to me, and it was kind of neat when she passed away to have something like that. I have a couple of pieces of doilies and things that's real detailed crocheted pieces. It's been given to me by people that said, "This is what my mother made." And one time somebody brought one and give it to me and said, "I believe you'll take care of it better than my kids will. So I'd rather you have what my mom crocheted." And so there again, that was a testament to what she had done, showing that she had cared. Yep.
They're addicted to quilting. But they quilt and they give their quilts away. And, you know, to people that are sick or, you know, they're just always quilting for people, you know, why they're sick.
Both. Yeah, both of my grandmothers, they quilted a lot of quilts, and there's a lot of people's got quilts that they put together. And back in the old days, well, not too many too many years ago whenever somebody had a house burned. Women of the community got together and they put stitch a quilt or two and give it to them so they'd have something warm.
It's almost a lost art nowadays, making garments and quilts and things of that nature. Like women of our age and younger, a lot of them. I mean, my wife can sew and probably make a quilt, maybe, but it's almost a lost art these days. Who takes the time to do that anymore? Maybe older generation.
A lot of women.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but it's is it younger women too?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I'm just, I'm wrong there.
Well, you have to get older women are, my mother had a quilt store, and I guess the girl I graduated from high school with, she was the one that ran, she wanted the store, you know, so she ran, so she was doing that in her 50s. I think that they start doing it around the 50s. Some of them
well, when my sisters were younger, a lot younger now, where we were attending at the time, we actually had sewing classes and all that from the older ladies teaching, trying to pass that down, trying to keep it from being a lost art. And no, they done more than this. They did more than quilting. They taught them how to seam curtains and clothes and all, make clothes and all kinds of stuff. How to read patterns, and yeah, it was a good thing. I pushed it hard. I said, we don't need to lose that. It needs to be something that we know how to do. But anyway, back to Dorcas. She was known by the things she done for other people. So, you know, that to me, it begs the question, or makes me think of the question, you know, what will people think of us when we're gone? What will be our legacy? Will it be something of a pattern of good works? Or will it be they were a good person? That's about all they can say about it. You know, most people don't say bad things about you at the funeral, and some of them I think maybe they ought to, so the others will learn, you know, learn not to repeat that behavior. But anyway, what would be said about us? Will our good works follow us like hers did? Question 17 is, name six things Peter did in connection with the raising of Dorcas. Yep, no.
But Peter rose and went with him on the first one. When they called for him, he rose and went with him. But that's just what I meant.
You went further up.
Yeah, I went further up, yeah.
Told them all to go forth, which meant leave the room. What's another thing? What's the next thing? Knelt down. Prayed. Yep. Spoke to the body. And then what happened? Or what was next that he done? Gave her his hand. Lifted her up. And they're alive. So there's actually several things you could have listed besides six. He did. So yeah, that could qualify as well. What I want to notice about these six things that which he did was, first, we might say it equivalent to us, he went to the closet to pray, got everybody out of the room. So he prayed a private prayer. He knelt down, which we've talked about posture before, but usually you see someone kneeling, is that's purposeful, shows their purpose. And then he prayed, and doesn't tell us what he prayed, but I've even wondered too a little bit, as if perhaps he knew Dorcas before this event. Because he'd been there before. It wasn't like it was the first time he'd ever been to Lydda. And so I wondered if he knew her, so there could have been a little more emotion involved in it, in this prayer. Don't know, just speculation. And then he gives the command. And then he gives, what I find interesting about verse 41 is he gave her his hand and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints and widows, presented her alive. And thought about this, was there any significance there? And he gave her his hand and lifted her up. Not sure what the significance is. Maybe it's just part of the narrative of the story. But when you think about it in regards to sin, whenever we are coming out of sin, sometimes we need a hand to help pull us, don't we? To help lift us up. The hand of the brethren, the hand of encouragement, the hand of fellowship in order to help lift us up.
I think it represents, like you're talking about, the things that we can do on our human side. What he just did, what Peter did was divine. When he said, Tabitha, arise, that's not really him saying it. That's Jesus saying it. Those should be written in red letters. Even though Peter's the one speaking, those should be written in red letters. Because no one rises from the dead without Jesus speaking them back to life. That he's speaking by his authority. It's the inerrant word of God coming out of his mouth. You can mind, it's just as equivalent as a red letter. Some people think red letter editions, follow the red letters more than the black letters. This is Jesus speaking through Peter. There's no doubt about it. Otherwise, she wouldn't have risen, period. When Peter said those words, Tabitha, arise, Jesus was speaking from heaven. Tabitha, arise. No question. But after that, just like with the raising of Lazarus, they had to roll away the stone. They had to roll away the stone for Jesus to raise Lazarus up. He expected them to do their part. He did the part that they did not do. And Peter helped her up. That was the part he could do. So he was leaning on the Lord. And I think the prayer thing shows the humility. He doesn't just approach it with, oh, the Lord give me the authority. I'm just going to walk in here and say, Tabitha, raise up. That was never Peter. After he got his humbling and was truly converted in heart and soul and became like a little child by the Lord, he was determined, to keep that humility as best he could in his life. And we see that he prayed before he did this and made this statement. I think he knew he had to appeal for that authority to do it. So I know that last part's speculation.
Well, it reasons. They lifted her up, and when he called the saints, presented her alive. To me, this is them a neat part of the story, because then you see the witness of the miracle take place is when they all see. And so question 18 on page 12, what is the result or the effect of this miracle? Many believed on the Lord because of this miracle. Twice we've seen in this story, people believed when they saw the power applied. Interesting thing to think about. We see the power applied today through the scripture, right? We see the power that he has forgiveness of sins. We see the power of Christ and all kinds of different things, and yet people still don't believe. Now, I want you to notice that in both of these cases, the word many is used. It's not the word all, but the word many is used. So therefore, it indicates that there were those who didn't believe. They saw it, saw the evidence, and they still did not believe. So just people hadn't changed, have they? They see some people today see the evidence, and they still refuse to believe. Any questions or comments before we move on to true false? Question number one, true false. Saul proved that Christ is the Son of God. True. Number two, Saul did not know about the plot to kill him. False. He did know. That was one of the problems. Saul was put through a window and let down in a basket by the wall. True. They let him out. Question number four. Aeneas had been sick a few weeks.
False.
8 years. 8 years, verse 33. Number five is the disciples sent two men from Lydda to Joppa to get Peter.
False. It's the other way around. Almost.
Verse. Was that verse 38? Yep.
Trying to get you on the subtle.
Yep, that word from there. All right. General questions.
Most random questions.
I know. It's like some of these I looked at and I was like, how do you figure this out? Mark, the first one was mark out the profession not mentioned in the Bible. What about confectioners?
Confectioners are referenced in Isaiah 8.
That'd be like bakers too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, confectioners were also sometimes people that did like apothecary mixing of oils,
yep,
and perfumes and things of that nature.
Well, I thought we could look at the printers as the scribes.
Right, I know. Manual printing.
Yeah. That's what it would have been, you know, up till the early 1900s.
Was it
14
or
1500s? Somewhere talking about with the press.
Yeah,
that was still heavily manual.
Yes.
Manual labor. Yeah, you get up to the 1900s before, it's not so manual. It's automatic presses and stuff like that. So, he's saying printers.
Well,
so what did some of y'all mark? You didn't? What?
You got barbers.
Barbers in Ezekiel 5:1.
Yeah. And then
I knew barbers and porters were.
Porters,
yeah.
John 10.
Porters are porters. Several mentioned, like a list this long.
Yeah. Porters, and no question about that. The confectioners is the only one I had to look up. Because I knew barber and the other one. I looked up barber just to be sure, but
you said in Isaiah you could find confectioners.
Yeah, let me make
sure. I've got 1 Samuel 8:13.
And on confectioners?
It is. It's 1 Samuel, it's not Isaiah. I knew it was chapter 8, I've forgot what book.
1 Samuel 8:13.
Yeah, there's only like one or two references to confectioners in the entire Bible.
So
it's
going to be printers. Yep.
Process of elimination. Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, they give you some a head scratcher right there. Had to sit and look at it. Question number 2 is mark out the food not mentioned in the Bible.
Tomatoes.
We find cucumbers in Isaiah 1:8, Numbers 11:5, butter, a list this long. About 25 scriptures. Garlic. Numbers 11, verse 5, talks about garlic.
Tomatoes but, are from the Americas.
So tomatoes are not there. I didn't know where didn't even think about looking up the origination of tomatoes. Number 3, who was the man that stayed outside and pouted when his brother came home? Yep, Luke 15, the older brother. He pouted because the feet, it wasn't about him. And he was pouting because of that. Who was Mephibosheth?
Well, there's two of them.
I know, but
all over again.
But I'm thinking that the child is who he's probably after.
Yeah, it's probably the child that was crippled at 5 years of age or so, and David showed mercy to him.
Huh? Mephibosheth is Jonathan's, one of them is Jonathan's son, as you found in 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4. As Timothy's making mention here, he was the son of Jonathan, who was the son of Saul, and there was the nurse was in a hurry with him, and so she falls, ends up crippled because of it the rest of his life. To me, his is a more interesting story than the other one.
And David took care.
Yeah, because that was what David was charged with from his friend Jonathan later in life, is take care of his son, take care of the household.
He was determined to honor that oath he made with
yep.
his friend. 2 Samuel 21, 7 through 9 is where you can find the reference to both of them, though. Because this is the occasion where Saul and his zeal violated a 400-year-old covenant with the Gibeonites. Joshua had sworn that no harm would come to the Gibeonites. Saul and his zeal killed some of them, like a lot of them. And so they're like, we don't want some ransom money for this. We want, you know, blood. And so, unfortunately, sons of Saul, descendants of Saul, were put to death for their father's crimes, in this case, to make atonement for, you know, the what he had done in his zeal for the Gibeonites. And that's not very typical. You know, usually a son doesn't have to pay for his father's crimes or sins, and vice versa. But in this case, they did. But anyway, that son of Saul, Mephibosheth, was hanged for his father's crimes. And then David spared Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son, from dying. So he made sure that he was spared, and the rest of them.
That only reason I remember about him is because the name is so different.
Yeah.
It's long and it's different. How'd you like to spell that as a child?
It's a lot better than the next word.
Yeah, the next one. There's actually two answers to this. What is the longest word or name in the Bible?
Isaiah's kids.
Yep, Isaiah 8, verse 1.
That's where I was thinking of Isaiah 8,
by the way. That's 18 letters. 18 letters there. And let me get it up right quick. And meaning swift. Swift is booty, or speedy is prey. That's what is the definition I found given. And
because the spoiling of Assyrians coming into
the
north to spoil Samaria, some of the northern tribes.
So since this said, what is the longest word or name in the Bible? I guess this time we went with the name. If we go to the other side of the or, what would you find? Jonath, Elam, Rekukim, something like that in Psalm 56. Psalm 56, it's got 18 letters as well. It's the same length.
Psalm
56. It's the name of a song. It means the silent dove of far off places. Let me look it up here. That's what I was going to look at. I didn't write what verse. Well, it depends on what. Okay, be back up there. Depends on what version of the Bible you have or you're looking at, because there's a title at the top that has it in it. There, Psalm 56, that is naming the. Yep. Yep.
That's still a name, though, isn't it? Having a significance, but. I don't know. Maybe it is a word.
Either way, it's big.
Either way, it's just as long as the other one. So.
It is big, it's long. All right. I don't know we've ever had this happen before. We're about 5 minutes early. So, unless somebody has a question. I take that as a no. Next week, we'll pick up with lesson four, which will be Acts chapter 10, which will be the story of Cornelius. Appreciate everybody's attention tonight, and you come into Bible class.